Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Happy Friday, America. Welcome to Furthermore with Amanda Head. Two incredible guests queued up for you today and a couple very important conversations. My first guest is Dean Galemis. He is a former NYPD detective. We're going to talk about what's happening in New York, the crime, the liberal policies that have contributed to the crime. And of course, you, if you ever tune into any type of mainstream or liberal news source, they are telling you that crime stats are down. Crime is down in New York. Ignore the evidence of your eyes and ears, as Big Brother would say in George Orwell's novel 1984. Ignore the evidence of your eyes and ears. They deceive you. The crimes that you see on the streets of New York, they aren't happening. We promise. Crime is going down. Well, we're going to talk about some of the policies that factor into the fudging of those numbers, because quite candidly, that's what it is. They are being extremely deceptive when they say that crime has fallen in New York City. I'm also going to talk to him about his organization, Global Security and Investigative Services. He started this organization to provide, you know, law enforcement type services outside of law enforcement in the private sector, because as we are seeing police departments across America being completely hamstrung by their cities and their states and unfortunately nationwide, they can't do what they want to do, what they need to do to keep cities safe. So this is increasing the size of private security within the private sector. So I'm going to talk to him about that dynamic as well. And then I have my very good friend and colleague, Ben Berquam from Real America's Voice. He is our go-to immigration guy. This guy is absolutely fearless and indefatigable. If you have ever seen Ben Berquam's reporting on the border on Real America's Voice, this guy, from one day to the next, he's 1,000 miles apart and he is go, go, go. When I used to cover rallies and things like that with him, this guy would be up at 6 o'clock in the morning running 5 miles and then he wouldn't go to bed until midnight. And I don't get it. I don't understand how he does it. But what he does is so important. He's actually in Romania right now. He's there at a Make Europe Great Again conference. I'm going to talk to him all about what's happening there, what's happening on the ground, the nations that are there that are represented at this conference. So we're going to have a great conversation with him as well. And we're going to take a very quick break, have a few commercial messages, and we'll be back on the other side.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back, everybody, to Furthermore with Amanda Head on this Friday edition. Unfortunately, we've got to talk about crime because it is surging in practically every single particularly Blue City. And of course, we have all heard these crime stats coming out of New York City. And Mayor Eric Adams loves to talk about how the crime stats are actually down. But that's not what New Yorkers are feeling. And I think when we dig into some of the numbers, you're going to find that that's not exactly the truth. And the perfect person to talk about this with me is Dean Galemis. He is a former NYPD detective. He's also the founder of Global Security and Investigative Services, which we're going to talk about as well. Dean, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Amanda.
Okay, I want to first start off with this flexing that Mayor Eric Adams, Kathy Hochul, a lot of the New York City and New York State elected officials are, you know, they're flexing on these crime stats. But when you consider the factors that go into that, first of all, the downgrading of a lot of felonies to misdemeanors, it just seems like they're fudging with the numbers. Can you kind of parse that out for us?
Yeah, you're 100% correct, Amanda. Statistics are easily manipulated. While homicides are down, shootings are up. So they're bad shots and they miss the targets.
Right.
You know, it's chaos in New York right now. In 2023, there were 28,000 reported assaults. Traditionally, 40% of all assaults are reported. That puts the actual number of assaults over 70,000, a historic record for New York City. Rape is up. Robberies are up. You know, they'll fudge over those numbers real quick, and they'll talk about the homicide number, which is really not accurate. Let's look at total shootings. Those are up. Assaults in the subway system, in mass transit, they're up. It's a real just, you know what, I don't want to say it, but
yeah,
some kind of show.
A you know what show, yeah.
Right.
I know that you have such a love for New York. I mean, so many New Yorkers, I mean, that is just, you know, it's their heartbeat. They have such an identity with New York. And I used to love New York City. When I was in high school and college, I used to love going to New York. That was under Mayor Giuliani. And things, you know, I remember the first time I told my grandparents that I was going to be going to New York by myself, and they nearly fell out of their chair because they were used to the New York of the 70s and the early 80s. They had no idea that Mayor Giuliani had cleaned up New York to such an incredible degree. But nowadays, it feels like it has reverted back to that place. Do you think that New Yorkers also aren't reporting crimes because they feel like, you know, with DAs not charging, with bail reform, all of these issues within the judicial system, what's the point?
Correct. What we're seeing is things like trespass, shoplifting are going mostly unreported. I know I have a client in New York City who we had somebody were trying to trespass them, and the police showed up and refused to arrest because the DA is Alvin Bragg is no longer prosecuting any trespass for any reason. So anybody can come into your premise, refuse to leave, and they just no consequences whatsoever. It's untenable. We can't stay on this path for long. But I believe that law enforcement is a pendulum. It was very far to the right for a long time. Now it's way too far to the left. And I'm hoping that some common sense kicks in here finally, and it settles somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, that would be nice to see. Anything I feel like would be better at this point. I wanted to talk to you about the subway crime, because this is something that, you know, we are all seeing these viral videos on social media, and the crime stats do acknowledge that crime on the subway is up 22.6%. My concern, because Kathy Hochul said she was going to be sending a National Guard, which she has, and increased a police presence on the subway. But my concern is that when you couple that with the porousness or the complete openness of our southern border, that it's not even necessarily just domestic crime, that you've got there's a terrorism element that thank goodness to this point we haven't seen. But the New York City subway system is traveled by millions of people every single day. And I hate to say it, but it is a ripe target.
I couldn't agree more.
Immigration
and Customs Enforcement has acknowledged that they have caught and released people on the terror watch list, and they do not know where they are currently. I think last number I saw was 130.
Yeah.
Are on the terror watch list, were apprehended at the southern border, and then with this administration's policies, were let go back into our population. What are they doing? Where are they? You know, with all these protests going around across the country too, at all these universities, for anti-Israel and pro-Hamas. And, you know, you got to wonder who's funding this, whose agenda is being pushed here.
Yeah.
And it's scary. And going back to the subways with Kathy Hochul, you know, at first talking about fudging stats, there was no problem in the subway. Then when there's such a pushback, suddenly she's deploying Army National Guard, which is just a smoke and mirrors routine. They have no authority. They
right.
can't do anything. Can I look in your bag? No. Walk past. Can't stop. Yeah.
No jurisdiction.
So 1 minute, no problem. Next minute, we have soldiers in the subway. Finally, the NYPD last month put 1,000 extra. They deployed 1,000 extra officers into the subway, and crime has dropped significantly. The NYPD, Amanda, knows how to reduce crime. They know how to reduce crime in subways. They are the finest law enforcement organization in the world. Let them do it and get out of their way. That's what we need to do.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mentioned a moment ago, how much worse can it get before it gets better? I would like to think that the pendulum is all the way in the wrong direction and this is the worst that it can get. But Dean, my concern is that you have so many people in New York City in particular, but in all five boroughs, really, who make excuses for the crime. And they are the same people who are touting these fudged numbers. And it makes me wonder, for those people, how much worse does it have to get? Do you think that we are at the point where the pendulum will swing, or does it have to get a little worse?
I think we need to have a big event, unfortunately.
Yeah.
For people to say enough.
I agree.
I got to tell you, I'm on the streets of New York every day, and I've never seen people on edge like they are. And really, it's perception, right? They can bring out all the numbers they want. There are gangs of illegal immigrants in large groups in front of all of our high-end hotels because they're being housed there. And
right.
All four of my grandparents are immigrants. I love immigrants. I think this country will die if we stopped allowing immigrants in. But we can't have people who we don't know and we can't handle. These sanctuary city policies, it's like they're intentionally trying to destroy New York. That's what all the common sense people are saying.
I know. Yeah. Well, and you mentioned the funding aspect of the pro-Palestinian stuff, a report out this morning from New York Post that, lo and behold, guess who's behind it? George Soros, the guy who seems to be weaseling his way into every sector of American society, trying to destroy it. And, you know, while we're on the topic of those protests, I have to ask you about the morale issue in police departments across the country, but particularly in New York, because we, for the last few years, have been talking about record retirement numbers, record low recruitment, and this is a nationwide epidemic. Talk to us about the morale issue in New York, because they are America's finest when it comes to law enforcement forces in America. They are absolutely the finest. America got to see that on display after 9/11, and it's such a storied institution and a storied agency, but my heart hurts for these men and women because it feels like they are just getting stomped on every day.
Morale in police departments, not just in New York, across the country, has never been lower. The defund police movement has destroyed policing in America. Amanda, police work is an ugly business, no matter how you slice it. And it's not for the faint of heart. And I got to tell you, you could take a 110-pound girl who doesn't want to be handcuffed, and in order to get her in handcuffs, you can't believe how incredibly difficult it can be if she doesn't want to be handcuffed. And sometimes there's violence involved in police work, and sometimes it gets a little ugly to get people into custody and to take them off our streets. And when these cops are petrified to do their job for fear of being recorded and being Monday morning quarterbacked and lose their livelihood, lose their pension, lose their house, lose their families, for what? They're turning a blind eye. They're scared to do anything. Liberal policies have affected how New York City handles all these protests. They used to do something called kettling, which was forming a line encompassing the protesters, and you could move the group wherever you wanted. The line mm-hmm. would open. The agitators would be removed by a team of officers brought behind. That's been, thanks to Letitia James, that's been banned from being used. The most effective tool the NYPD has in their arsenal for dealing with these mass protests is they've been cuckolded, the police department, and it's disgusting.
Yeah. If there was one thing that New York City could do for its police officers as far as unshackling them, you know, reversing the hamstringing that has happened, What tool would that be that New York, that NYPD would need to restore a little bit of law and order?
They need two things, not one.
Okay.
First thing they need to do is get rid or significantly alter the Bail Reform Act. But that's a New York state law, not a New York City law, but it affects. And then they need to reinstitute qualified immunity, which I'm not sure if you know what that is. That's the law that indemnifies police officers from personally liable for actions they take while on duty. Reasonable actions. I mean, if they're done drugs, doesn't count. But if they're making an arrest and their intentions are good and they violated somebody's rights because they weren't really breaking the law or they didn't understand the law, whatever the case may be, there's 40,000 New York City cops. One of them makes a mistake. It's math, right?
Yep.
They can be sued personally now. So think about it. You can arrest. I can arrest somebody. I can be perfectly right. I can get a frivolous lawsuit from this guy that is false arrest. They're not going to indemnify me. Then what? I have to get a lawyer.
Yeah.
A lawyer costs $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 every time you talk to one. Retain a lawyer, it's $5,000. The guy wants to settle for $1,000. What am I going to do? Am I going to hire a lawyer or pay the guy $1,000? Pay the guy $1,000 on a cop salary? How often can he do that before he's ruined?
Right. Yep. Yeah, it's absolutely disgusting. And it's interesting that you bring that up because we're also dealing with an immunity issue with the president and former president of the United States. And this is becoming kind of a central theme of people who are in positions of power. I wanted to just bring in a little bit of the Donald Trump issue. I don't want to talk politics, but I also want to talk about that with respect to Jonathan Diller, an officer who was killed on the job. And you had this dichotomy between Joe Biden, someone who seems to want to destroy this country from the inside in via many means, but with respect to crime, I think that's definitely something that is leading to the destruction of America's greatest cities, including New York. And then you have Donald Trump, who was at this officer's funeral for Jonathan Diller. Joe Biden's rubbing elbows with Bill Clinton and Barack Obama with this swanky fundraiser with celebrities there. And it seems pretty clear to me that there are two very different mentalities on the Republican side and the Democrat side. Your thoughts on that?
I mean, you said it all. I think you're 100% right. Donald Trump is a man of the people. Even though he's rich, they want to paint him as a billionaire and a bad guy. He is a man of the people. He understands people. He appreciates people. If you can see his interactions with people, Joe Biden is... he's from another era. He's not what America needs right now. I don't think he's running the country right now, to be honest, if you're way into politics. But what he did on that day when that officer is being buried, he should have posted, a decent person would have moved that date of that fundraiser, right? I mean, that says it all. These liberal policies have got to stop. We need to support our police officers. We speak about John Diller. And one thing I just want to throw in real quick, Amanda, we had said about cops being scared to do their job. When John Diller approached that car, there was a back and forth between the shooter and himself where he was trying to get the guy to comply and he refused to. And when you hesitate as a police officer, you get hurt.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, John Diller had to hesitate because he's racked by fear. If I grab this guy and drag him out of the car, I'm going to get in trouble.
End up on the internet.
I have a young son at home. I got to worry about him in college. And you hesitate. And now the poor guy is no longer with us. He has a widow and an orphan son. Mm-hmm. And when are we going to wake up?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can imagine that anytime a situation like that arises with cops across America, the first thought is, I don't want to be internet famous. I don't want this to go viral. I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to have to pay thousands for lawyers to defend myself. You know, it's disgusting. And, you know, you brought up Joe Biden. He was on the ground for 3 hours that day before that event took place. You can't tell me that in 3 hours he didn't have time to go visit Jonathan Diller's widow and his son, or at least just show up to offer his respects. But it kind of is endemic of his mentality, because when those 13 service members who were killed in Afghanistan, when their bodies arrived back in the United States, back on U.S. soil, he was checking his watch. And it just seems to be, you know, he's the guy who talks about the death of his son, who did not die in the line of duty or serving the military, serving our country. And he loves to bring it up. And yet when someone does die serving our country, serving his city, like Jonathan Diller did, Joe Biden can't even bother to show up.
You know, Amanda, I don't think he didn't think about showing up. But I think what he thought about is, well, how will I be received?
Yeah, that's a great point.
And it probably wouldn't have been very well. However, when you're a politician and you're a public servant, which from your local mayor to the president of the United States, they're public servants. Sometimes you need to do the right thing, even if it's going to put a little leg on your face. Yeah. And I think he would have scored a lot of points with independent people if he just would have shown up. If they would have said, get out of here, at least he could have said, hey, I showed up. And I give Kathy Hochul that credit, because Kathy Hochul, which I'm not a fan of.
She did show up.
She did at least show up, knowing full well she wouldn't be received well. But at least she can say, put politics aside, I'm sorry for your loss, and show up. So I give her credit for that. And I don't give her very much. But
Joe Biden didn't
have that same goal. Too bad.
No. And, you know, I think when it boils down to the basics, and this is my opinion, I think Joe Biden's a coward. And I think he didn't. I think you're exactly right. I think that's why he didn't show up. But I want to end on a little bit more of a positive note. You are the founder of Global Security and Investigative Services. Tell us about that organization.
It's a full service private security and private investigation company. We serve the entire Northeast United States and soon the state of Florida. We provide security guards, professional security agents, which we can't even keep up with the demand at the moment. And we believe in the public-private partnership. That's what New York City needs to shift to. New York City and every city has a major hiring problem with law enforcement. And never has there been a more important time when the public and corporations are going to have to lean on private security partnership in order to keep their people safe at work, their facilities safe, their schools safe. The NYPD can't do it anymore by themselves. They're at manpower levels not seen since the early 90s. You know, the city population has grown by, I think, 2 million people, and they have less police officers than 30-something years ago.
Yeah.
So we partner with our clients, and we provide security programs to ensure that their facilities are safe, that their workplaces are safe, that their people are safe.
I want to ask you, you talking about what this organization provides, coupled with what we are seeing in police departments across the country, do you foresee a cultural shift in law enforcement where if we continue down this road, governmentally, and police departments aren't supported across America, people are retiring or quitting, and they're moving into the private sector of protection and investigation. Do you perceive a shift in law enforcement where the protection aspect is shifted more to the private sector?
It's going that way right now. Retailers, high-end retailers in New York City, the police will not do anything for shoplifters. They show up, they take a report. By the time they get there, they're gone. There's no consequences even if they get a ticket. The only thing they can do is prevention and security measures at their stores. The police aren't helping people with trespass problems. We have a banking customer who, they have banks in 5 states. They have a homeless crisis in their ATMs. People sleep in their ATMs. No one can access their money. And in these poor neighborhoods, their clients rely on the ATMs to get their rent money, their grocery money. You know, they work 2 jobs. They go to the ATM at 11 o'clock at night, and there's 7 homeless people shooting up in the ATM vestibule. And the police won't get them out.
Nope.
Unbelievable.
Because they're basically not allowed to. It's devastating.
Homeless is being ground to a halt by these liberal policies. And New York, look at San Francisco. How many businesses, over 50% of their, think about that, over 50% of the retail businesses in downtown San Francisco have shuttered. Do you know what kind of job loss, economic loss? It's mind-blowing.
Yeah. I mean, you look at San Francisco, a city that used to be so thriving and bustling. I mean, songs made about it, movies made about it, TV shows based there, world-renowned restaurants and shopping there. And now it has been basically reduced to rubble because of these liberal policies. Dean, this was a really awesome conversation. I would love to invite you back on again in the future. I think you have such a smart perspective on all of this, and it was an honor to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here, Amanda. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, sir. All right, everybody, don't go anywhere. We're going to be back on the other side.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back, everybody, to Furthermore with Amanda Head. You know, I love all of the guests that I have on this show, but sometimes it's people who I've never met. I might have met them digitally. You know, we might have conversed on social media, but I absolutely just I flip out and I love it so much when I get to have a friend on the program, especially someone who has such an expertise in areas of importance right now in politics. And this dear friend of mine also happens to be a colleague of mine at Real America's Voice. I think as far as Rav is concerned, Ben Berquam and I are considered OGs, because as far as the lineup of anchors, I'm pretty sure you and I have been there the longest of everybody who's on air, right? Well, maybe David Zier. David Zier beats us.
Does David? And what about Steve Gruber? He was kind of, was he after us?
Was he?
Yes.
Around the same time, I think.
I know Tudor came before me, so the whole Michigan contingent. But either way, we're OGs. And yeah, it's been an awesome ride, an exciting ride. And I'm just praying for the future.
Amen. Okay, so you are not stateside. Once again, you are out of the country. This time, though, you are in Romania. Tell us why you're there.
I just landed in Bucharest for the Make Europe Great Again event that's going to be taking place at the Romanian Parliament tomorrow and Sunday. And I'm excited. You know, it's MAGA in America and it's mega in Romania. So We're basically taking the template, and they've brought people from all over the country and all over the world. I'm sitting at a table with folks from the Czech Republic and from the Netherlands, and Alvita King is here, and several other people from the U.S. And it'll be a really kind of great mix of people talking about, you know, how do we save Europe, and looking at the models and how America plays into that. And obviously, my expertise is border and politics and a few other things, but I've been invited to come cover it for Real America's Voice, and then also speak on Sunday on the migration, the disaster of Joe Biden's border invasion, and the connection between Europe and all of the forces, the globalist communist forces that are driving it on the U.S. side and on the European side. So it should be a great event.
Okay, so I knew, you know, Romania borders Hungary, and we know that Hungary is MAGA because of their Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who is very resoundingly and boldly a major supporter of President Trump and is dying to have him back in the Oval Office, as many of us are. I don't know if I necessarily realize that Romania is MAGA. Why is Romania MAGA? Are they dealing with some of the same issues that some of these other nations have dealt with respect to migration?
Yes, and Eastern Europe just has been slower to adopt a lot of the communist, leftist, you know, LGBT, trans, climate change. I think in some ways, the proximity, you know, a little further out, it's a little more conservative, traditional, politically speaking and familiarly speaking. And they've been somewhat, you know, they went through communism. They went through that forced government rule, Hungary, Romania, and a lot of the countries near here. And they, you know, when they started seeing that, they were very slow to change. And thankfully they were. So they've kind of been out of it. You know, you think of Western Europe, a lot of the changes that are happening there, the bad changes are because of mass illegal migration, in particular from Muslim parts of Africa. You've got, you know, some of the from the Middle East as well. Thankfully, Romania is in a place that it's not really a pass through. It's, you know, if they're going to end up in the Middle East, they're going to basically go around Romania or go through other countries that are more you know, less hostile to them. So it's kind of been in this little bubble, like you said, with Hungary and a couple other countries. But other than that, and Poland, you know, Hungary, Poland, really, it's Hungary, Poland, Romania are the that last wall of defense in Europe. And now we're, but we do have people from the Netherlands. And so it's an interesting dynamic where you have some countries that have resisted this, the change, and are actually showing you know, why and the benefits of it 20 years later, Hungary in particular, not allowing mass illegal migration from Muslim countries. And you look at Western Europe that has just been utterly destroyed, criminal behavior, rapes and murders and everything else, and just culturally being destroyed, the UK, all of that. So yeah, it'll be, and some of it's kind of unknown too. You know, you don't really think of Romania, but the powers here, the people in the Romanian parliament are very MAGA, and they're actually part, the person that I was invited by was at CPAC US, and he's actually in the European parliament. So he's part of the MAGA contingent of the European parliament. But similarly in Europe, you know, you have that kind of battle going on between, okay, what is MAGA? What is conservatism? What is, you know, were the establishment Republicans versus or conservatives versus? So there's all of those battles going on. And this event will kind of have like, and for instance, Michael Steele is coming to speak at this event, which, you know, I don't consider him MAGA, but, you know, he's coming to speak here. So it's an interesting dynamic of where Romania wants to go and where you're starting to see some other European countries realize they need to go.
Yeah. You know, what's been amazing to see, and you mentioned the Netherlands just elected, I'm trying to remember his name, Geert Wilders, who was demonized by the media for being quote unquote far right. You've got Giorgia Meloni in Italy, of course, in Argentina, Javier Milei. And I'm wondering if you get the feeling in Europe that, you know, there's a common thread among these people. You know, Giorgia Meloni was the Italian Trump. Javier Milei is the Argentinian Trump. Geert Wilders was the Dutch Trump. And they are demonized by their own media, it seems. Oh, yeah. Like, is that what you see?
It is the same model. It is the same enemy. It is the same tactics. It's all the same. And in particular, in the Netherlands, he still has not been sworn in. He has not established the government because that whole communist leftist contingent, and even the Rhino side. I mean, it's the same, you know, they call them by different terms, but it's the same battle they're facing. They can't get a majority, and they don't actually technically have to have a majority. They have to have a plurality, but they can't have a majority against them. And they still haven't got that 5 months after he was elected. So similar battles to, you know, what we see in America, where President Trump, when he was elected, you still had the Paul Ryans of the world that were, and Ryan's Priebuses undermining you from within and working against you, the same things here. And then on top of that, and the exact same is true, you've got the United Nations, you've got all these globalist, communist, radical environmental groups and NGOs that are all deep inside of the fabric of the government, that are tied into all of the grants, that are tied into the direction of policy. And so it's all the same. It's the same players, the same actors, the same organizations. And it's, you know, it just shows you that the battle we're facing in America, we've got to be really, the stakes are just incredibly high, because the left has been doing this for so long. And we're just coming around to realizing, holy cow, these guys, they're winning. We're not even in the game. for the last 20 years, we weren't even playing the same game. You know, we thought we were on different playing fields. We were playing two different games. Yeah. They were working on every single area of society, and we were sitting there debating on what was offensive and how we could, you know, be the neoconservative where we just go along and compromise, and all of a sudden our country's gone and the world's almost gone.
Yeah. It's amazing to me that they have those factions as well. We all have a common enemy, and that is, you know, basically progressivism within mm-hmm. our own shores. Do they have dark money funders? Like does George Soros drop his money on those countries as well?
Yeah, absolutely. When you think about it, you know, you want to put the axis of evil. It's the World Economic Forum. It's the World Health Organization. The World Bank, it's all the same players and all the same, you know, George Soros, it's all the same. So while they're influencing America, they're doing the same thing, destabilizing Europe. And with this whole idea of redistribution of wealth to these lower income countries, all using the same tactics of radical environmentalism to destroy industries they don't like, and then say that mass migration is because of climate change and you can't stop it. And we're going to invite all these people in ultimately to destabilize these countries and remake them in the, it all goes back to this, you know, the, what Klaus Schwab calls the Great Reset, the Global Reset. That's all of it. So all of those same actors that are playing in that world in America, that game in America, they're all part of this globalist movement to do the same thing in Europe. And it really, I mean, Europe, for the most part, is pretty much gone. I mean, they're about 10 years ahead of us on the transgender leftist ideology, climate justice, all of that model, and on migration. I mean, they you go to Sweden. I was there this summer. You don't recognize it anymore. It's basically many of the cities have been taken over by radical jihadists. Same thing in France. I mean, they call them no-go zones, and you don't see cops there. We went there, and it was like, wow, we just went into an entirely different culture, and you feel the threat. So if, you know, we're in a place right now, America is really the last hope. And we've always been that kind of the beacon of light, the city on a hill, but we really truly are. If we don't get President Trump in office in 2024, it's bad. It's bad everywhere. And Europe, you know, you have some of these nations like Romania and Hungary, but if America's gone, and Europe, for the most part, is gone, there's very little that some of these smaller nations can really do other than just be total isolationists.
Right.
And, you know, everyone else moves there. You know, that's what my wife and I talk about all the time. It's like, well, if America falls, where do you go? You go El Salvador until the next dictator comes in and undoes what Bukele's done. You know, it's like.
Right. So, well, I mean, look at how fast the turnaround happened in Brazil. You know, 3 years ago or 2 years ago, we would have talked about going to Brazil. And then, you know, they had a quote unquote election. And now they have basically a socialist in power.
Yep. But then at the same time, not to be, you know, just the Debbie Downer, but or Benny Downer, I don't know what you want to call me. But you also see those beacons of light, the Milés, the Bukeles and the Netherlands you've got. So there's this shift taking place. There's a paradigm shift kind of happening everywhere as some countries are going further left. The ones that went left first and realized how bad it is are starting to come back to the right. And then you have all of these nations that are falling, you know, but that are just losing all of their people. And this is kind of the unknown. And like in America, you know, we're kind of having the world, America is kind of a microcosm of the world. If you look at Chicago, so now you're having all these people in the inner city that are all of a sudden becoming MAGA, while you have people in the Democrat Party that are going against Biden because he's not jihadist enough. So this, you know, there's all of this turmoil, and really it's one of those things. And what's interesting from a biblical perspective and spiritual perspective is thinking about what happened just last week with Passover, this week, we're still in the week with Passover. You know, Passover happens. You've got all these schools shutting down to protect jihadists. You've got President Trump's trial starting, all of these evil forces lining up. And then you think, but God's done it before.
Amen.
What stops him from doing it again? And you look biblically, the time that God acts is always when we can't. and it's outside of our control. You don't need a miracle when you can do it in your own strength. And so all of these things are happening. And I'm like, well, Lord, thank you for giving me life. Every day is a blessing. Let me be light in the world and show me your direction. And I just feel like, you know, if we have that mindset and we walk into every day thinking that and acting with that purpose, God's got it. So
amen.
Have hope.
And I've always felt like, you know, we talk about the prospect of America falling, but I don't know if the Ben Berquams and the Amanda Heads would actually leave, because I know for me, you know, if America, quote unquote, falls, the only way that she really falls and she is really beyond the point of coming back to reality and sanity and founding values is if we abandon her. And I don't.
Right.
I don't feel like that's in our future. But Ben, you know, you and I are absolutely tracking, because you bring up, you know, you and I are both believers. And I think about this often with respect to globalism versus nationalism. And so many people, you know, criticize President Trump for being America first, for being, you know, a nationalist, a quote unquote nationalist. But when you go to these European conferences and you go to other countries, I want to see other people who are nationalists. I want someone from Poland to put Poland first. I want someone, you know, from Argentina to put Argentina first. That's what makes That's what I think makes Donald Trump so special in this current time, Ben. And I'm interested in your thoughts on this, because so many people would say, well, Donald Trump's not really conservative. You know, socially, he's more libertarian, maybe even liberal, you know, years ago, but he's come around. And, you know, fiscally, he wasn't that conservative. But what is so important about Donald Trump and so important about his time in politics, and this is why I think, you know, God has worked all of things out, all things for good, is because Donald Trump is that nationalist beacon. He may not necessarily be the most conservative, but he's putting America first, regardless of what that looks like on the left to right spectrum.
Yeah. And I look, you know, again, going back to biblical reference, who God used in the Bible. I mean, I look at a King Cyrus who wasn't a Christian, a Jew and came and said, you know, he did more for it. It's the same thing. And in some ways you almost need that force that is outside of traditional politics, traditional viewpoints. And in particular, I would even say challenging the church. The church has been so weak for so long. We've had so many weak, turn the other cheek Christians that allowed all of this hell to be brought into our country, into our schools, into our society. Yeah. And now you're looking and you're saying, oh, he's not Christian enough. Well, what did you do? What did you do as the body to actually fight this evil? At least he's doing something. He's doing more. When he actually was the first president to actually go to the Walk for Life, he put justices on the court that overturned Roe versus Wade. I mean, like, no one would have ever, I can't even, when that happened, I couldn't even believe it. And now you may say, oh, well, he's, you know, now he says, oh, he said something about it going back to the States. He's also a pragmatic guy. You know, he's not, like you said, he's not a perfect guy, but I'll tell you what, he is the right guy for this time in history. And God has used him more for his kingdom on earth right now than I can think of anybody else. And so I look at President Trump. My biggest fear for President Trump is the same fear, the problem that we had in the first camp or in the first go round, his first presidency, was who he had around him. And so what we have to do is make sure that he has the Steve Bannons of the world and not the Ryan Priebitzes of the world,
of course,
in his ear and giving him direction. But no, President Trump is the guy, the only guy right now that has any shot of saving America. And you know, and that's just the start of it, because we've got to get MAGA in the House. We've got to get MAGA in the Senate. But we have to clear out the establishment Republicans and remake that. And we have to be a part of that, guiding President Trump, guiding these other forces towards those conservative ideals.
Yeah.
But you're right. Everything should come from the standpoint, every nation should come from the standpoint of what is best for my nation and for the citizens of my nation. And that really should be number one, because then you get the borders right, you get the economy right, you get education right, and you know, hopefully you get God back at the foundation, because God is really the key for all society to work properly. So on the whole thing, President Trump's the right guy for the right time.
Yeah. I mean, you look at things from a biblical perspective, and how often I mean, really, every time the people who had the most impact for the kingdom, kingdom with a capital K, were imperfect vessels. I mean, Paul, King David, two men who were literally persecutors of Christians and murderers.
Yes.
And King David, who God called a man after my own heart. That, you know, it just puts things in.
Murderer. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's like, no, that's it. Well, and look, we're all sinners. And if God only used the good people, none of us would be on the list to be used. That's right.
Amen.
So, I mean, I thank the Lord that he uses imperfect people. That means he could still use me.
That's right. And all of us. Well, Ben, I love that the Lord is using you in Europe at this Make Europe Great Again conference. I know that the panel you are doing on immigration there is going to be absolutely spectacular. I don't even know what time it is there. I think it's probably like 9 or 10 o'clock at night. I appreciate you taking some of your shut eye time to spend with us. And I hope to see you very soon, my friend.
All right, Amanda. It's great talking to you. Great to be with you. And furthermore, we'll talk later.
Thank you, sir. All right, everybody, don't go anywhere. We're going to be back on the other side.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back, everybody. Let's wrap up a few news stories from today. So I woke up this morning and I saw some chatter on Twitter. Sorry, not Twitter, X, formerly known as Twitter, about President Trump showing up to New York court today. And it kind of broke my heart because even though his statement was brash and very Trumpian and kind of funny, it's really kind of pathetic and sad what is happening. So he gave an appearance or gave a few words outside of the courthouse. He said, "I want to start by wishing my wife, Melania, a very happy birthday. It would be nice to be with her, but I'm at a courthouse for a rigged trial." And it's funny because it's that Trump kind of brash language. At the same time, he's missing his wife's birthday because he is there standing trial for this absolutely ridiculous so-called hush money trial. And I think the world is watching. The world is very concerned about this, as we are in the United States. I think for anyone who is a critical thinker who looks at these prosecutions of President Trump with an even remotely neutral, nonpartisan eye, they recognize what a farce this is and how dangerous it is to our republic. And then this is something that John and I talked about on the show yesterday with respect to President Trump's presidential immunity trial happening down at the Supreme Court. And you listen to some of the questioning. I mean, Justice Alito was absolutely spot on in some of his questioning. If you haven't heard any of the lines of questioning from these justices, I would encourage you to go out and listen to, especially Justice Alito's questioning, because he pointed out a few really important things that kind of smacked in the face of the government arguers and really kind of made them look stupid, which they deserve to look stupid because this is a waste of taxpayer money. But that's kind of the point. They are using every tool that they can to not only fight back against President Trump, but the taxpaying supporters that he has across America, because they hate you. They absolutely hate you. They hate what you stand for. They hate the way that you fight for this country. They hate the way that you clutch your Bible. They hate the way that you respect and revere and find sacrosanct the founding of our country. They hate that. And as a result, they hate you. But you look at the line of questioning from Ketanji Brown Jackson. And I'm sorry, I know she's a Supreme Court justice and I should respect her, but time after time, she makes me regret any default respect that I would have for her as a Supreme Court justice. So in her line of questioning, she's essentially arguing that a president acting in his capacity as president doesn't have any legal privileges beyond what a normal person would have. So for me, Amanda Head, as a private citizen, I could go into a privileged situation, let's say, you know, a SCIF. I could sit down with military leaders, with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I could get on the phone with Middle East command leaders, with CENTCOM. And I can make war decisions because there's no difference legally between me and the president. Legally speaking, she's arguing that I am no different from the president of the United States. And it's absolutely farcical and ludicrous. And it doesn't hold any legal or constitutional water whatsoever. But what do you expect coming from the woman who, during her confirmation hearing, couldn't flatly answer the question, what is a woman? It is a huge problem with these liberal justices, especially Ketanji Brown Jackson, because she's this new era of liberal justice. And it's quite frankly ridiculous. Okay, I want to move on to a tweet that I saw this morning from Thomas Massey, Congressman Thomas Massey from the great state of Kentucky, who has been for a while one of my favorite members of Congress because he is very plain in his speech in putting things out there for the American people, for putting his opinions out there. He doesn't fluff things up with you know, parliamentary rhetoric. He's just very real. And he put out a tweet. He said, DC establishment Republicans that just voted to spy on you without a warrant, sent $100 billion of your money overseas, and bought the corrupt FBI a new headquarters, would love for you to be quickly distracted by their virtue signaling over campus protesters in tents. Now, look, on the TV show this week, John and I spoke a lot about these protests because they are increasingly more violent. It's disgusting. They are stomping on the civil rights of Jewish American students. And that's where I draw the line. I am a big proponent of free speech. I am practically an absolutist when it comes to free speech. But when you start blocking property, destroying property, blocking students from being able to go about their lives, you're hindering their safety. That's where I draw the line. And I know that a lot of people think that Los Angeles is this liberal bastion, and a lot of us saw what just happened at USC, University of Southern California. They had to basically cancel any commencement speeches because of the rhetoric of the person who was supposed to give the speech centered around her pro-Palestinian beliefs. But my husband was at a screening last night in Beverly Hills, and he sent me a video of there's a park near the Beverly Hills sign. A lot of you have seen that sign. It's very iconic. It was in the opening of 90210. It's that beautiful Beverly Hills sign. And there's a big grassy area surrounding it. And he sent me a video of 1,400 flags that are there with a plaque that said this art installation includes 1,400 flags representing victims from over 30 nations who died during the attack by Hamas on October 7th, 2023. And let me tell you, in Beverly Hills, there are a lot of Jewish Americans. And these people are not at all swayed by this progressive BS. They are not at all swayed by these young idiots on college campuses, because that's what they are. These people are, these are not anti-war protesters. These are not the anti-war Vietnam protesters from the 1970s, okay? These people have no clue what they are even protesting against or fighting for. Many of you saw the viral clip of the gal on NYU campus yesterday or day before yesterday, And she admitted on camera that she didn't actually know what NYU was doing to deserve protest. She had no clue. And this is kind of our reality right now with young Americans. I'm not going to paint with a broad brush and say they're all morons, but you know, they say empty barrels make the most noise, and the empty barrels of this youngest generation are certainly the ones who are making the most noise. And it's devastating to see. I hate to end on that sour note heading into the weekend. I wish I had some happy news to give you guys. It's sunny here in Los Angeles. I know you guys don't care, but I'm pretty happy about it because we typically have May gray and June gloom. But that's a little bit of sunshine. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. I hope you all have enjoyed this third week of podcast. My goodness, I can't believe I'm already 3 weeks in. I think this is technically the ninth episode. So I appreciate you all sticking it out with me. And I pray that you continue to join me on this journey with Furthermore with Amanda Head. Remember, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we have out a new episode. You can find me on Apple, on Spotify, any of the places where you listen to your podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at Amanda Head, and you can find the podcast on Twitter at Furthermore Pod. Everybody have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Stay safe. Be blessed. I'll see you on Monday.